G'day, my name's Suffolk Ram.
Skazius.
Welcome to episode 225 for the Rand Nerds podcast.
225, yeah, yes. Did it.
Yes, apologies for not being on the last one. I had a mild family emergency, but it's all sorted now. So apologies for that, and thank you, Skaz, for soloing it for me.
Good job, Gav.
This poor man got asked to solo it literally about 2 minutes to go. So
that was a bit of a panic attack. I was like, shit, I had plans to talk to Ram. Ram's not here.
Yeah. So, but he did a stonking good job, and yeah, thank you. So once again, Saz, thank you.
Thanks very much, mate. I appreciate it. That was fun. I'm you know, glad things turned out all right.
Yes, all hunky dory now. So it's all good. So good. I'm happy we're all here. It looks like I'm here to save the day.
Yeah,
poor Skaz.
Because things have been hectic. Prior engagements, it's the summer holidays.
Fucking summer holidays.
Bollocks, basically. Yeah. I haven't had much of a chance to play anything. And there's so many things have come out over the last few weeks that I've wanted to play. And I've just not had a chance to play them. I've just wanted to cry.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a... It's also been a particularly miserable summer as well. It's not been a great weather a lot of the time.
I don't know. It depends. Like, so many people really love the blazing heat, and I fucking hate it. Absolutely hate it. So I was like, yeah, mate, it's a gorgeous day. I'm like, nah, mate, I'm a gamer. I want to sit in my room and play some video games. If I turn on my PC, everything catches fire.
Yeah. I'm pretty convinced that Legend of Vampires is actually all about found a bunch of gamers that got sent back in time by accident. Because think about it, they don't go out. They like to live in dank, dark places, like crypts or their mother's basement.
It's the same thing.
Same thing. When you think about it, if your mum's dead in the crypt, it is her basement. you know, the only thing they have, unfortunately, there's a lack of Just Eat in the distance past, or Amazon. So they are starting to improvise. And, you know, Blood Aversion is where it all comes down to.
Mate, so, average PC gamer getting anywhere near a virgin?
Takes one to find one.
Oh, good call.
Yeah, the only thing that has been morphed by by media vampires is how charming we are. In reality, Nosferatu is probably more accurate. The hands are like that from RSI. From the RSI of the control.
That was a great impression.
Oh, the audience, audio viewers won't get to enjoy that impression.
Oh God, that was beautiful.
That's I'll screenshot it. But you think about it, the hands, RSI.
Yeah.
You see, this all makes sense. I've blown it. You see, you can't deny this all makes perfect sense.
Yep.
See, he's not denying it. He knows I'm right. Vampires are PC gamers sent back in time.
God damn. Suffering with hardcore withdrawal at this point.
Oh, God. Something pings at me. Oh, Xavier pings at me. What did he ping? Xavier pinged something at me, and I'm not sure what it was. I'm really confused. Something pinged at me, and I'm not sure what it was.
It was the Discord group chat for the games note.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Check it. What did he say?
I'm trying to find it. Hang on.
What do you mean you're trying to find us at the top? It's underneath this call. It should be, I hope. Are you telling me you got more friends than us?
I've got a lot more friends than you.
Mate.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yes. Yes. So I've just had we've had a funny reply to a comment that I made on something that I sent previously that we talked about in a PC game and a gaming night that I mean nothing to everybody on the channel right now. So,
was it good?
Yeah, it was good.
Good.
We, like a vampire. Yes, like a vampire.
Do you think Xavier's a vampire?
He is from the sort of North countries, isn't he?
Well, he could be.
You could be. A lot. Yeah. You see, basically, ours podcast, I informed Saber that there was a advert that the Danish Road Safety Council put out telling people to always wear a helmet. And he hadn't heard about it or seen it, which is amazing because I'm not Danish, and I had. So I eventually found the advert and sent to him, and he found it amusing. And the advert was set in ancient times, and it looked like, I said to him, I don't think Denmark's changed at all. And he goes, no, it's not changed. Like you say, you had to be there. So apologies to that.
Good job.
I've just realised I've just rambled on about nonsense. But that's fine. That's what we do here.
I was going to say, that's normal. What are you on about? Yeah. I spent 40 minutes doing it in the last episode.
Yeah. That wasn't rambling. It was highly scripted content. I was very proud of you.
Totally planned, mate.
Yeah. That is amazing. It's amazing. You should be proud of you for that content.
Oh, mate.
Right. So... games.
What's up? What have you been playing, Ram?
Well, I've technically been playing this. You'll see. Just bear with me. I picked up a couple of weeks ago. I was going to talk about this on the last podcast.
You do know clickers don't count. Or idle games. They don't count.
But I'm idle most of the time.
Go on then.
That's right. I have been playing. I picked up the tabletop RPG Call of Cthulhu.
Oh God!
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So I looked at it previously about a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I sort of got a bit into it, but then I was actually picking it up. So I then happened to come across. YouTube I've been sort of like discovered recently. They had actually had like a free part Call of Cthulhu RPG led by an experienced keeper, as they're called, who's itself a DM. And it looked really good fun. And I then sort of tracked down a couple of podcasts, live playing podcasts of it, listen to them. Sound really good. So I want to pick this up. So, managed to find a starter copy, which is actually harder than you think to find because it's nowhere near as popular as Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
And every shop under the planet sells Dungeons & Dragons these days. It's actually quite hard to get hold of. You can get... you have to go to like an actual game company to get it.
Like with the Cyberpunk RPG, you have to actually go to Pondsmith's company, his site, and then he'll link you to the handful of other places that will sell the physical books.
Interestingly, if you buy Call of Cthulhu stuff, because it's published by a company called Chaosium, I think they're pronounced, if you buy it through their website, not only do you get the physical copy, you get a PDF copy as well.
Oh, that's neat.
That's neat. I have to say, first thing to say about Call of Cthulhu is, in terms of starter sets, far better value for money than the D&D starter set. Far better value for money. So the star set you get with Call of Cthulhu, so D&D, basically you get a book that has the rules in it and basic character creations and pre-gen characters and a book with a set of dice and a book with a scenario, says a little mini campaign in it. And don't get me wrong, that's a good 20-odd hours of gameplay in that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decent set. And for cost you about 20, 25 quid, you're for a good time if you get it. I can't fault that. It's a good price. But the Call of Cthulhu set, not only do you get... it's a similar sort of thing. You get three books. The first book is like a choose-your-own-adventure book. And it's designed to be played by yourself. And by playing it, it basically teaches you the rules of the game.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So
I like choose-your-own-adventure books.
Yeah. Well, this is... And you can actually do this book on... It's online. You can go online and do it right now.
Oh, cool.
They're literally just there. It's all free. You can just go online and do it. I'll link it to you later. You can learn, by spending half an hour of it, you'll have learned to play Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, that's rad.
Yeah, because you actually create a character doing it. You have to print off a character sheet. You actually create a character. You need a set of role playing dice to do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure
D100 buckets of them. The kids have got bags of them upstairs.
Exactly. So. Say role playing dice, and you basically play through it, and I played through it, and I got burnt alive.
Oh, excellent!
Yeah, And that basically teaches you how the basics of how to play the game. The second book
get
is
Burnt Alive.
Yeah. The second book is The Rules, which I'll go into more detail later on about the rules. The third book is then it's basically three campaign stories. So I get the feeling that they've designed this game, right, okay, you're going to buy for you're going to play for the solo guy by yourself. You ain't going to convince one of your mates to play it with you. So the very first mission is designed to be played one-on-one, keeper and one other person. It can be done with two other people, but it's designed to be done with one or two max.
Right.
And it's a very, very friendly, nice, simple scenario. Unless you really fuck up, you should be fine.
You're a PC gamer, you need to go to the shops.
It's very basic, yes. And then you've got the proper source scenarios after that where you can play up to five players, and they are more proper scenarios. So it's all great experience. But not only do you get that, not only do you get then a set of character sheets, it gives you printed out copies of all the handouts you need. So you actually got proper printed out ones, nicely printed out. So when you get to the beginning of the book, you need to hand your players this handout. You just got it out of the box and it's there and you hand it to them.
Oh, cool.
Really nice set. Yeah, it's a really decent set. And it's about, I managed to pick one off about 18 quid.
Bargain, and that's mate.
Yeah, it is. It's everything you need in the book. So pick that up. Okay, great. What I love about Ursa Corfu is that everything you buy comes with more missions. So the DM, you have the keeper screen. About 25 quid, which is quite expensive, but it's not much more than Dungeon Master screen, but comes with two scenarios. So you get a key, so you get a book with like two decent scenarios in it. If you play the base starter, you want to get the main game. So the only sort of book that's actually really essential to buy after the starter is what they call the Keeper's Handbook, which is basically their version of Dungeon Master's Guide. That also comes with an adventure at the back of it. And that, yeah, it is a really neat game. It's
lots of extra content for basically nothing, really.
And in general, looking at the community, then it's generally considered that Chaosium's stuff is really good quality. You know, it's well placed stuff. D&D's got a big reputation that some of their source books are really, some of their modules are really good. Some are quite ropey.
Yeah.
And there's quite a variance in them. Whereas the general consensus with Chaosium, apart from a few exceptions in general, all that stuff is really good. I think because they are a small company and this is their flagship product, they basically can't put out a duff product very easily. They have to rely on good play.
Yeah.
The other thing big thing about Call of Cthulhu as well is there are campaigns you can play, but in general, it leans towards one-shots. And for those who aren't RPG knowledge, one-shot basically means is you'll play this mission in two to three sessions and then it's done. Yeah. And it's one storyline and it's done. It may have like sort of multiple chapters, but in general, you start to finish, done, and then your character, you have all new set of characters. And that seems to be how most people play it as well. The podcast I'm listening to is literally like story after story after story after story, one after the other. And they are, they're also over multiple parts, but they all want new characters every single time. That's how Corfu very much leans to it. There's a reason for that. So I'll start waiting for explains all the main differences. Well, compared to Dungeons and Dragons, because it's the one I'm most familiar with of RPG system. Secondly, mm-hmm. It's what most people are going to know. If you've ever played a tabletop RPG, odds are it's been Dungeons and Dragons. It's unlike you've been played something else. And it's something that's it's very easy to find players and so forth. So, through those things working through. So, Call of Cthulhu is now in its 7th edition. It was originally published in 1985 or 1980s, thereabouts. Chaosium basically got the license to make the RPG. The actual game hasn't changed that much. Although they've had edition updates, the game is designed to be backwards compatible. So, at the back of the Keeper's Handbook, there's a whole section of how to convert an older module to play in the new version. And most of it is just simply a bit of multiplication to change how the game, some of the mechanics used to work. And things like, these skills that used to be in old editions don't exist anymore, but use this skill instead. So literally like 2-3 pages of how to create. So again, use a podcast of this too, which I'm going to plug. It's called the Apocalypse Players. They played a scenario that was written in the 1980s, but they just went through and converted it to the modern edition. very straightforward. That's neat. D&D, because they've changed how much of it changes, converting editions is actually very it's not easy. It's doable, but in some cases, it's a full rewrite to get it to an old version of what we, because the mechanics of Dungeons have changed so much.
Well, yeah, for sure, because everyone has complained, like, from, I can't, it's been so long since I've looked at a Dungeons & Dragons handbook, but I can't remember what the big edition that everyone loved, like, bummed hard, and then there were loads of kind of spin-offs that other companies have made
I think the last one that was very popular was 3. Then they had 3.5, which is basically the patch version of 3rd edition.
Yeah.
Fourth edition was very much divided the community. I never played 4th edition, but from what I've heard other players talk about it, it was almost like they wanted to make Dungeons & Dragons play more like an MMORPG.
Yeah. That was the oversimplified, noob-friendly D&D, wasn't it, if I remember correctly?
Well, I would actually argue that 5th edition is one of the more simplified versions of Dungeons & Dragons there are out there. If I showed you a 3rd edition character sheet to a 5th edition character sheet, it's not comparable. It's how 5th edition is so much simpler. And by simple, I mean refined is probably a better term actually to use. It's simpler, but doesn't really take too much away. People obviously still complain because some people like maths. And that's really... So Dungeons & Dragons is still a fairly maths-heavy game. Call of Cthulhu, in comparison, is very much designed to be more of a talky RPG. Mm-hmm. So Dungeons & Dragons... I've said this before, actually. The RPG tabletop games I like are ones which are more about character interaction, because that's something a computer game can't do. Hack and slash, computer games can do very easily. Yeah. And they can make it fun very easily. So D&D tries to, and it's got very simple but complicated combat rules. And it's very much geared around combat. Its whole section is based on just combat. Call of Cthulhu, the basic premise of Call of Cthulhu, if people don't know, this will make sense. So in D&D, you are fantasy people living in a fantasy world. You're going to go on adventures and slay goblins and dragons and monsters and all sorts of... Get gold and get better and get gear and level up. Learn more spells, be the best, right? Call of Cthulhu, you are just ordinary people, like us, who find themselves in an extraordinary situation.
Yeah.
Think of it like the X-Files. You've got two normal people who suddenly find them fighting against a horrific alien creature. That's what Call of Cthulhu is like. So there are no levels in Call of Cthulhu. You do not level up at all. There's character progression, which I'll get to how it works later on, but there's no character levels. There's no character classes. You have a profession, which will control what skills you have, but it's not that you have a character class. There's no character races. You're human, because, you know, it's set in our world.
Yeah.
You're human. So everybody's still level playing field. As a result, you do have to lean into it a bit more. Call of Cthulhu is a lot more lighter system, but if you want to game it, you can do it a lot more easier. So you have to play with it. But, again, I don't mind that, because it's basically a bit like, it's so different to, like, improv or other forms of role play. You're having to sort of like know your limits and play, but don't take the piss, basically.
Sure.
And that's half the fun.
Don't bard it.
Yeah, don't. If you go into Call of Cthulhu with the idea you're going to min max it, you might as well play Dungeons and Dragons, because that sort of, it allows itself to be done like that. It allows these insane combinations. Call of Cthulhu is basically, I'll give you an example by what I mean. In Call of Cthulhu, you don't have to keep track of money or cash or anything. Equipment is, use your common sense, what would your character have? If your character's a journalist, they're going to probably have like pens, paper, and Call of Cthulhu is generally set in the 1920s, so probably have pens, paper, they might have a camera, you know, they might have a very basic camera, but probably not. Are you going to have a gun? Almost certainly not. If you want to go buy something, you're in a town, it's just assumed that you've got money to do it. Again, unless you don't take the piss, unless you're playing a character who's got a very rich background, you can't just walk in and buy the most expensive suite at a hotel.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. There is a methodology they use to guide this, but it's very loose. And basically it's use your common sense, don't take the piss.
I like those rules.
Yeah, I like it. Because I also does things like, let's say, for example, you want to pick a lock, you know, or have I got a pin? Well, I'm playing a female character who I said is very keen on her looks, so she's probably got her hair pinned up. Then I'm going to point out her hairpin. Logical. Fair enough. You can, you've got a hairpin. You can have a go at picking the lock. That's the sort of where it thinks about things. So you have to keep track of that. So it's very loose in me. There is a guy, which I'll come when I get to skills. But yeah, if you want to abuse it, you can, and you can very easily abuse it. So, but hopefully you've got a good keeper who'll basically say, no, don't be stupid. Hopefully so. Yeah. Character creation is very straightforward. There's actually a simplified form of character creation which works very well, particularly if you're just doing one-shots. There is a more in-depth one in the Keeper's Handbook, but the similar one, I think, I could tell anyone who's ever played an RPG before, we could probably have a character rolled up, or not so much rolled up, because most of it's just like here are pre-assigned values, put them wherever you want. You can have a character pretty much put together in about 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And good to go. It's the way sort of it works is you have like basic stats. And now in Dungeons & Dragons, your stats affect pretty much everything else you do. So your strength stat, for example, affects how good you are at fighting, at wielding weapons. It affects how good you are at climbing is one of the things it affects. There's like skills that are based around strength. That number filters through a lot of other functions of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Dexterity is the same. Dexterity affects how good you are at range weapon. It filters through. Call of Duty doesn't do that in general. There's one exception. Oh, actually a couple of exceptions. But your basic stats, again, are things like strength, which is how strong you are, appearance, which is basically charisma, intelligence, which is how smart you are, it's all general smart. There's also education, which is to what level you've been educated to. So you might be a very smart character, but if you ain't got a shit education, you might not have got much of an education, so you might have a low education stat. Mm-hmm. There's power, which is probably the weirdest named one because it's more like psychological willpower type thing. And dexterity. Dexterity is that you ever saw, but there's a couple of other bases I can't remember. But you basically, it says, okay, here are like these values, assign those to those skills, stats. Those stats generally do not affect your skills. Some things are derived from your stats. You have things like sanity, which I'll come on to later, because sanity is a big thing in Call of Cthulhu. That's derived from your power stats. Hit points. Now, to give you an idea of how Call of Cthulhu is different to D&D, your hit points is generally going to probably be between 8 and 12 hit points. A gun does about 1d10 damage. So, yeah. And if you take more than half your damage from one attack, you get a major wound, which could be like a broken leg, and I lose a limb, that sort of thing. So it's very deadly combat in Call of Cthulhu. You're not really meant to fight. You're meant to sort of like, especially when you're like your last resort, or use distraction. You're really meant to try and sort of investigate and escape.
I was going to say, yeah, because like how many different character types would there be that are actually experienced in fighting? Like actually fighting?
Well, so what they have is professions. So moving on from your basics, you have skills. So in Call of Cthulhu, you have skills they have in Dungeons & Dragons. However, your skills are not dependent on your base stats. Every skill will have a base level ability to it that you have. So, for example, firearms has a basic stat of 20. Call of Cthulhu is a D100 base system, so everything's in percentages, so it's 20%. Driving, I think, is 20% as well. That's like your base stat. Some, like, which are very like very specialist, like archaeology, have a base stat of 1%. Those are your basic. So every skill has a base stat. There's one exception to the skill that does work off your basic stats, is the skill which is dodge. That's high for dexterity value. That's the only skill that works off your basic stats. Everything else is a base stat for everybody. Everybody has the same base level. You then pick a profession. And your profession is a profession that you're going to have in the 1920s. And they are quite... The Keeper's Guide has got a load in it. There's also a Investigator's Handbook that's got more in it as well. But they could be anything from journalist, archaeologist, soldier would have some degree of weapon skills, police officer, private detective. Basically, think of all sort of like common jobs, like farmers in there as well. All the sort of common jobs you can think of in the 1920s, that's your profession. What happens with that is that profession gives you a list of skills. You then get given a number of skill values that you basically can put into those slots and override the basic value. So let's say, for example, you're a soldier, you've got the profession of one of your professional skills is firearms, rifle slash shotgun. One of the values you can plug into that is like 50%. So you can override the 20% with a 50%. Because that's your skill. That's what you've been trained to do. So you're going to be better at it than someone who's not been trained to do it. You can almost see the base skills as like someone who, any other person just picking stuff up and having to go, what they're going to succeed. Yeah. After you sign your professional skills, you also sign your personal interest skills, which are like your hobbies. And those, basically, you pick 5 skills and add 20% to the base value. So perhaps your special hobby is climbing, so you'll add 20% to the climb base skill, which I think is 20% to start with, so it goes to 40. Mm-hmm. So you basically increase. So that's your skill bank. You basically add on things. One of the other skills you have is a skill called credit rating, which is basically a measure of your financial ability in the 1920s. So most will average about 30%, 30 to 40%. Someone who's well off would be about 70, and someone's like heredity, which would be like 100%. That is used as a general guide to what your character can afford. If your character's got a credit rating of, say, 20, you're not going to be buying a car. It's that sort. It's a general. This is a general guide to what your character's got money available to go buy. They can probably buy a basic gun, not going to be buying a fancy gun. You know, or perhaps you could also use things like if you want to say sweet talk somebody who's well off, you might use your credit rating to get an idea of how they're going to judge you and how they're going to talk to you. Because they can see like if your credit rating is low, you'll be wearing cheap clothes. They can see you're poor, basically. So that's actually an interesting little twist of money, is this credit rating basically is their sole restriction on it.
Yeah.
It is very neat. You also have one of the basic stats is size, which is an abstract way of describing how big your character is. Right. So a high size value could mean you're very tall, could mean you're very fat.
Right.
It's an abstract way of looking at your build. So in real life, I'm probably like a size 60.
Right.
Because I'm quite fat. You're probably like a size 40, 30, 40, because you're
fitter
weight compared to me. It's a general abstract way of looking at things. That comes to things where it might be like, okay, can you crawl through this hatch? Well, unless you're size 40 or less, no, you can't. That's how it works. Hit points and damage bonus are also based on your size and your strength combined together. There's a stat called build. So build is your general overall how stocky you are. So an average person is probably build 0. If you're quite a big build, like rugby player top, you're going to be build 1. If you're quite a reedy person, you're going to be build -1.
Okay.
Build is also used for other things like animals. So like a horse, we build like 3. First, the fact that it's a big animal, you're not going to be resting it to the ground.
Yeah, that's a neat way to look at it.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose Dungeon Dragon has the size codes like medium, small, large, huge, sort of combine the two as an overall idea, but builds there sort of like, are you stocky or not? So we've gone through the stats and skills. That is basically it. That is your character created and ready to go. So there's not a lot to it, and there's no real maths involved until you get to the actual game. So the way the game basically works is a D100 based system. Which means you literally, you don't roll 100 side dice, you roll 2 10 side dice, and you use those to decide on your effects. One becomes the tens, one becomes units, and so if you roll a 5 and a 6, it's 56, for example. Right. Or you can, most RPG dice system you'll buy will have a D10 dice with tens on it. And if you roll 000, it's 100. So how it works, you roll, for any time you have to do a skill, you roll a D100. If it's less than your skill value or your stat, you pass. If it's higher than that, you fail.
Right.
There are several types of pass. So just rolling underneath your skill value is called a regular success. If you roll under half your skill value, it's called a hard success. If you roll under a fifth of your skill value, it's extreme success. So if your skill was 60, if you rolled between 31 and 60, you've got a regular success. Under 30 is a hard success, and under 12 is an extreme success. Okay. What they generally measure is, in general, when you call for a skill check, you'll just call for a skill check, and if someone rolls really good, you might give them a bonus. The keeper might decide to give them a bonus. if they, you might decide that, okay, this skill you're doing is quite tricky, I want a hard set. So the example they use, you're driving along, normal just driving doesn't require a skill check, just general driving. Need to weave in a bit of traffic a bit quickly, that's a skill check and a regular success. Need to weave between traffic while you're being chased by cultists in a car shooting at you, that's a hard success, you need to get through that.
Sure.
Need to jump a bridge, that's going to be an extreme sense. Extreme sense is meant to represent the actual like limits of what a human can do.
Yeah.
That's where extreme sense comes in. You can also, now another mechanic I really like in this is it has the ability to what they call push a roll. So let's say you roll your D100 and you fail. You can ask to push the roll. And pushing the roll basically means you can have another go. However, this is what I like about the system. You have to give a in-game reasoning why you can have another go. You have to RPG kind of way why you can do it. Right. So it could be, for example, someone's been wounded and you try and stop the bleeding. That's a first aid skill roll. You roll it and you fail. You decide to push the roll. And you say, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get my shirt, I'm going to rip off a load of my shirt sleeve, I'm going to wrap it around the room, try and make a tourniquet, try and stem the bleeding and try and cut it off that way.
Yeah.
You've given an in-game reason why you can have another go.
Okay.
But the rule is this. If that second one fails, the keeper is allowed to apply dire consequences to you.
Oh.
So in the case of the first aid, perhaps you have a go at it and you end up killing the person because you do something really wrong or make it a lot worse.
Yeah.
So that's the idea. It's a neat little mechanic because it makes you have to do it requires an RPG logic as to why you can have another go. Mm-hmm. There is a concept of bonus dice and negative dice, which is a bit like advantage disadvantage in Dungeons & Dragons, where you can roll a dice twice and pick the highest. In this case, you roll the tens dice twice and pick the highest, but keep the units. So there is advantage twice to pick the lowest, but keep the units. So it's a neat little mechanic. I love that it makes it an RPG, a actual role playing background to it to make it work. Rather than if that was Dungeons & Dragons, it would literally just be you get a reroll on that. There would be no sort of mechanical in-game reason to do it, which is what I like. The other stat I like is they have this thing called luck. So you generate luck at the start of the game by roll for character creation, you roll 3d6 and times by 5, and that's your luck value. Luck has two main purposes. It's basically the hand of fate. So let's say, for example, you jump in a car and you want to see if there's a key in the car, the ignition. I might say to you, do me a luck roll. If your luck roll passes, the fates are good for you and there's a key in the ignition way to go. If it fails, it's not there.
Right.
So it almost like affects how the game plays straight away. The other thing you can use is luck for, this is actually an optional, but nearly everybody I know uses it. Everybody I've seen uses this rule, is you can use your luck to adjust your skill rolls. So let's say you roll a skill roll and you roll 63 and you need a 60. You can spend 3 points of luck to reduce it down to 60 to pass it, but those luck comes off your luck skill permanently.
Oh.
So you can basically use your luck up. Campaign-wise, it is a way to regenerate luck, but it's very slow in comparison to as quickly as you can lose it. But in one shot wise, you can make yourself less lucky later on, but in doing so, use it to get past skills and stuff. A neat mechanic. I like that mechanic. What I also feel I love about luck as well, if it's a group effect and you all have to roll, whoever's got the lowest luck score. If you've got someone who's really unlucky, they could fuck you all over.
That's great.
It is great. The other sort of big thing about Call of Cthulhu is sanity. So what you're dealing with, the sort of Cthulhu Mythos, is things that mankind weren't meant to know. Or not much know, but weren't meant to understand. You're dealing with sort of cosmic entities that are not on our scale that we can comprehend them. And you're going to come across horrible, nasty things as a result of dealing with sort of cult stuff. This is done by your sanity. So every time your character comes across something horrific, finds a dead body, finds a mutated body, blood starts pouring out of the walls, this general something nasty happens to him, a dead body starts to move, something reanimates. You know, every time something weird out of body happens, you'll be called on to do a sanity roll. If you pass your sanity roll, you may still take some sanity damage, which means your sanity will go down. You may not. Depends on how bad what you're looking at is. It's like, okay, this is really bad, but if you pass your roll, you'll still take damage to sanity, but if you failed it, you'd be a lot worse. If you fail your sanity roll, then you'll take a variable amount of sanity damage. How much is depending on what the thing is. So, for example, I think the idea is like you find a dead body, it only did like 1d2 sanity damage. You find like a creature you don't recognize, it'd be like 1d8 sanity damage potentially. And that is, again, is permanent damage to your sanity. So every time you take a test later on, gradually you're going to your sanity will gradually get edged away out over the course of this gaming session. If you lose more than 5 points of sanity in any one from any one source, you go temporarily insane. Which means there'll be a initial effect of like, oh, you just wave your cane, you drop it, or you scream, or you run. But you'll then suffer from some sort of sanity, like you may just run away, or try to run away. You may become incredibly violent. You may start to discover a phobia. You may start to discover a mania and get obsessed with something. If you lose in one game day more than 5% of your, one-fifth of your starting sanity, you become indefinitely insane, which for one-shot purposes is basically you're permanently insane for the rest of the game.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, that's in one day. So if your base sanity was, say, 55, if you lost 11 points of damage in one day, you become permanently insane.
Neat.
In the campaign, there are ways to recover from that. And like if you do a campaign game, but again, most people tend to play one shots, so basically your character's gone insane. The game I think the reason character creation is so streamlined is so that you can roll up a new character very quickly if you need to. And most modules come with pre-generated characters ready, and the key is basically told have these to hand. So if one of your guys goes insane, and that's because you are so easy to damage. And take damage to get killed. And unlike D&D, there's no recovery. You're dead, you're dead. You know, once you die, you're gone for good.
Yeah.
There might be a couple of spells that get around, but in general, you're gone for good. Then your character can you basically have like come with an in-game reason why they're there, and you can hand them a character. There you go. You can carry on this character. So perhaps a police officer comes to investigate disturbance. That's now the new player character. That's how you sort of get around. You're encouraged to do that as spares, basically, ready for this sort of situation. Again, I like the sanity mechanic because it's just the idea of gradually drove your players insane. It just sounds brilliant. And again, it's basically like, look, when these people go insane, it doesn't mean that the character is now completely useless for the game. Because their sanity may still be beneficial. And don't forget, someone could be insane. Someone could believe, let's say someone develops a theory that everything's being caused by a dog manipulating everything. They can believe that and still be useful. They can still do things. They generally believe that that's what's happening. And they'll use that for their logic and reason behind everything they do. And again, your characters, your players are encouraged to play that and roleplay that.
Yeah.
And basically roleplay into it and not take the piss too much. So again, sort of being sort of like game relies on you leaning with it, because it'd be very easy for a player to basically just ignore it if they wanted to, or you'd have to take control and make them do it. The game says, no, let them do it, but trust that they're going to do it properly and sort of at least go with the flow. I like the sound of it. I think it's hilarious. And it's just so nice to drive people insane. It's brilliant.
That's your favourite thing to do.
Yeah. Well, that's every keeper's favorite thing to do, because the sanity is like the thing of Call of Cthulhu. Because in all the books, most characters go gradually mad over time. And in the Elder games, as well, Call of Cthulhu, sanity is a big thing in the game. The Call of Cthulhu game I played beginning part of the year, sanity was a big thing, and it's a really neat system. I will just mention progression, because the game doesn't generally lend itself towards can be played as a campaign, but most people don't. But if you do. Progression, I think, is quite a neat system as well. So how progression works, there's no levels, but every time your character uses a skill, I need to flip back to sanity for one quick thing I forgot to mention. Because this is another neat mechanic I really like. So your character gets a large amount of sanity damage one go. Before they go insane, you get them to roll an intelligence check. If they fail, it's fine. They don't re-understand what they've seen. They don't contemplate. They can't stand it. And so if they're fairly okay. If they fail, they fully comprehend what they're seeing, and that's what drives them insane. So if you've got a character with high intelligence, great for a lot of things you do in the game. But if you go insane, you're so smart, you understand how bad it is, and you go completely insane. That's brilliant.
That's
a really neat idea. It's like, for one time, you want to fail this role. You really want to fail this role, because if you don't, your character's going to realize what's going on, and they're going to go mad. So I think the idea is, your character could be so dumb, they don't really understand they've gone insane. That's what I love about it.
Beautiful.
Progression. So, I just had to quickly back to that, because progression ties into that. So, the way progression works is every time you use a skill, you put a little mark, or the first time you use a skill each game session, you put a little mark, or each sort of like mission, you put a mark next to that skill. At the end of the game session or mission or whatever, you basically, for every skill you've used, you roll against it and you want to fail. And if you fail by rolling above, you can increase it by D10. So the idea is, skills that you start off really low, you're more likely to fail them, but you'll get better, and you'll get better fairly quickly because you're more likely to fail them. As you get better, the progression slows down. Again, I think it's a nice, fairly neat self-balancing system, because it's very light to get very, if your skill level's 90, you're unlikely to get that one. You're very unlikely to progress that skill very much, very quickly. But if your character is below sort of like 20, there's a good chance you'll get some skill points in that. I think it's a neat way of progressing the game. I think that's quite neat. I didn't mention fumbles. So okay. Call of Cthulhu has a fumble system in it, which basically, in case of like, say, using a gun, might be it misfires, or you drop, or you have a real accident when you're doing something. Skills based around fumbles are... if your skill level is around 50%, if you roll 95 on the dice, you fumble it. If your skill's above 50%, you have to roll 100 on the dice to fumble it. So if you're quite good at it, you've got to really fuck up to do something bad. Again, nice little leak feature I quite like. I say, as a game system, that's pretty much the whole game system. It's very simple.
It's clean. It's well thought out.
It's really clean.
Not as much faff or fat that you have to kind of...
Because D&D does require quite a bit of maths. Call of Cthulhu is, can you divide by 2? Can you divide by 5? If you can't divide by 5, can you divide by 10 and double it? Because then you'll get the answer. Mm-hmm. That's basically all the maths you need to know. If you can do that, you can play Call of Cthulhu. Whereas D&D, character creation, you need to add, this affects here, I've got this spell here which affects that and does this and so forth. It gets very complicated. And very mathy. If you're new, like, what's my bonus to this? It's because it's my skill here, but I'm wearing armor, which reduces it and so forth. And it gets, there's a lot of, you doing something to D&D can have a lot of knock-on effects. You have to really work through step by step. Okay, I've got this ability now. That can affect this, but will affect that, but will affect this. Call of Cthulhu, because it doesn't do that, it doesn't bother with any of that. It just makes it an awful lot simpler. Call of Cthulhu is actually, I'd say, in terms of like teaching on playing an RPG, it's quite good at teaching on an RPG mechanics wise because it's very simple. Downside was, I do feel that it requires a slightly more, you need to have someone who's naturally good at RPGs or a more experienced RPG player to go lean into it fairly quickly or can roll with it fairly quickly, because it does rely on you to play along with it. Which I like. I don't mind that, because I think actually that works really well when you've got the right group of people. But Call of Cthulhu and because it's designed so nicely around one shots, it works really easy. I mean, a lot of the missions are going to be played in 2 to 3 hours, like one afternoon session, maybe 4. So we once debated doing an RPG for round three first. Call of Cthulhu would be a perfect choice because it's so simple. It'd be a good one to do if we were going to do
it's
one.
It's clean and it's quick, and we don't have to sit there faffing for.
We don't have to sit around for half an hour generating a character, which is what slows it down. So I think that'd be a good one to choose. If we did decide to do one, that'd be a great one to choose. But honestly, I'm really pleased. When I was last podcast, I just picked it all up and read through the books and so forth. I hadn't had a chance to play a session. Now a chance to play a session with it, with my players, and we had a great time. As I learned from D&D, my players are psychopaths.
Yeah.
So We're playing the scenario, and the scenario is this. You're all friends of this guy who's dying, and basically when he was a young man, him and his mates got together and they accidentally summoned some sort of outworld demon into this world. And over the course of time, all these people died. It's been sort of hinted that when he dies, the demon's going to be able to escape. And he basically hires you guys to, or asks you guys to go and expel the demon for him because he's too old to do it, and basically get rid of it. So he gives him keys to his farmhouse and so forth. My players were like, right, there's this possibly demon here. We don't believe the demon's there, but it possibly is. His son is a bit of a dick. What we're going to do is we're going to try and convince his son to go to this farmhouse instead and hope he gets killed. And then we'll know there's a demon there or not. I love the logic of it. I mean, it's psychotic logic. It's like, why are you doing this? He's a bit of a twat. Okay, that's why you're going to send someone to their death. The great thing is what they didn't know. If they sent to his death, they'd all suffer massive sanity damage. I didn't tell them this because saying someone to their death. Yeah, like, you're all go slightly insane because you sent someone to their death. Unfortunately, they didn't like the fact that when they got to the son, he refused to go because his father died 2 hours previously and he was trying to sort out his family and he was grieving, refused to go to the farmhouse no matter how much they tried to convince him. It's like, yeah. Oh, guess we're going. Yeah. And then they spent an awful lot of time in the library researching. Because the game the game's about investigating things and finding things out. But yeah, it was a fun first session. I'm so pleased that my players sort of leaned into it and got properly into it and really enjoyed it. And it just flows so. D&D is a great system. I love D&D. It's really good fun. This just flows so nicely, though. It's so easy. You may go through a long period of time without ever rolling the dice. It's so nice because it's very rarely needed. Because another one of the rules in the game is like, don't make people roll dice loads. If you want to roll someone to climb up something, they roll it once. And if they pass, they pass, they do it. Don't make them roll like, in D&D, I think it's like every 10 feet you have to re-roll. If you're climbing something, call for it, nah. If they pass, they pass, it's done. Don't worry about it.
It's quick and simple. It's clean. You know, if you ever wanted a quick and dirty tabletop RPG or pen and paper RPG, to play, this is the one you go for. If you don't want to sit there and faff and...
Yeah. And I'll put a link to Chaosium in the website because their site is so full of useful information. There is so much on there. It's completely free to download. The sort of quick guide rules, I've spread it. You can download them off the website and play and you're good to go. All your character sheets are on there. They've got free modules or missions on there to download. There's a wiki on their site. The wiki's got the beastery in it. It's got the bestiality on it. No, it's got the beastery in it. I suppose they have got Deep One hybrids, which are kind of like half fish people. So, yeah, you know, bestiality. You've got the beastery. The beastery is in the back of the keeper's book, but they've actually got all the stats on the website for nothing. You just literally look at them, they're there. They clearly are a company who's really keen on keeping the players happy. And getting to play loads of shit.
They're smaller, and so as you say, they're pumping out higher quality stuff. They're knowing they can't take their player base for granted. They're trying. You know, they're releasing a product that they can be proud in. In turn, keeping players happy, staying in business. Yeah. They're not as big as D&D, where they can have a big failure and still keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Their first sort of like player book. But you can sort of like mission book you get, which got like five scenarios in it. It says you don't need the main keeper rule book to do this. You only need the basic star set, and you can use this book. It'll work fine. You don't need it. Anything else? So you can, and as I say, if you buy it, you get the PDFs for free. What more could you possibly want? Really neat. But yeah, I would love to be able to run a session for us on Games Night. For if you do 24-hour game stream at some point, or even on a Games Night, I'd love to be able to run a session.
In fairness, we have to figure out when we're doing the 24 hours.
I do not say, but actually messaged me about it just now.
Oh, there you go. Because he'd been talking to me about coming over to the UK next month.
Yes.
Somewhere around the 19th.
19.
No, I was before then. I'm just trying to remember when it was, because I'm out of town next month on the 24th. I think you said he was going to come down between the 14th and the 21st.
All right, and then how long would he stay for?
Well, he'd arrive on the 14th and go home on the
21st. Oh, right, yeah. Oh, so he said come down, but true, I thought he meant he's going to arrive during the date.
Yeah, no, I believe that was the aim, was the 14th until the 21st.
I could probably do what weekend would that be? I'll have to look in my diary, see which weekend I'm at work.
Okay, Gav.
Because if it's a weekend I'm at work, then I'll be at work. I'll be working that weekend, which is all the only time off. You see, the sad thing is, the last week of September, I'm on holiday and I'm completely off.
All right.
So, yeah. But I'll have to, because that'll be the 16th, 17th. I'll have to look at my diary. My phone's on airplane mode at the moment.
We could always ask him, see how it goes, man. Because, I mean, you know, we could do it. We could do a tabletop in 24 hours.
To be fair, he has asked when I'm off work in September. He's not actually asked for dates. So I'll just go back and apply to him, and we can discuss. We'll be able to discuss this on Wednesday, won't we?
Yeah, sure.
So, but yeah, I'll I'd love to run you guys a little session. I think it'll be great fun. And if you want, I can have them like half a dozen pre-gen characters. You can just pick one if you want, rather than rolling one up. It's up to them. So. Because again, that's something at Call of Cthulhu is it's fairly easy to manage it down to less player numbers.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes I should say this is good between 2 and 6 players. That's a big range. D&D wouldn't do that. It's like 4 to 6. That's your range. So, but yeah, I would love to do something like that. We'll have to figure it out. But yeah, cool. Once we get off podcast, I'll switch my phone back to airplane mode. And I'll look at the dates.
So, two questions.
Go on.
What made you decide to go for, and you said you were watching, listening to podcasts. I assume you don't just listen to, you know, one or two of all of the pen and paper podcasts you listen to. What are they?
So, I've sort of gone now down to like two podcasts to listen for, one for D&D, one for Call of Cthulhu. Okay. Simply because there isn't that many hours in the day.
Sure.
So the D&D podcast I listen to is called Greetings Adventurers. It used to be called Drunks and Dragons. It's now called Greetings Adventurers. They changed the name for basically they relied on adverts to keep going, and people stopped advertising with them because of the name.
Sure.
So they had changed the name, unfortunately, about 2 years ago. That is a very, I would say that is a, it's an American group. It's not like Critical Role, which is like all professional voice actors. So these guys aren't, they're just normal people.
Yeah.
I like this. It's a very slapdash, very laid back. They're not super serious. They're into it, but they're not like hardcore serious into it. They'll happily sort of take the piss out of themselves and so forth. They're nice and light. I quite like it. It's really funny, and they don't take too much time. They don't take themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
On the flip side, you have the Apocalypse Players, who's a fairly new podcast. They've only been going about 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I would say, is higher, in some ways, higher production values. They are all experienced. They'd all played the game for a long time before they made the podcast. A couple of them are actual actors in real life. That they do, they saw this is all their hobby anyway. And they basically, what I also about them is they tend to do at most of the modules they do are existing missions and stuff. So you can listen to them play it. And there's a couple which I've listened for. This is really good. I could literally go and buy it now and play it, run it for my players.
That's pretty cool.
That's like, they've got a couple where the guys themselves have made it, but most of them are like, pre-existing ones. Like I say, I said at the start, one of the modules they used was written in the 1980s. Because where Call of Cthulhu is set up, it's designed to be able to upgrade things really easily. It was able to be converted across into a modern system. There's one they play on there which was really good. It's called Machine Tractor Station Kharkov 37. And it's set in Stalinist Russia. Because that's something about Call of Cthulhu. It's a system designed that you can basically pick up and plop it into different eras. So by default, it's set in the 1920s, but you can easily push it to the 1930s. But it's got rules that if you want, it's got like certain skills which are like modern. So you can have like computer skills and stuff there. So if you want to set one that not in like modern day, you can. It's designed to be easy to pick and play. They also release supplements that basically allow like different periods. So like they've got one called Gaslight, which is like Sherlock Holmes sort of style.
Yeah.
Era and stuff. There's one that sets it like in the future. There's one called Pulp Cthulhu, which is like makes it more like action film like. So basically gives you more hit points and stuff to make it more almost more D&D like in a way. So they do lots of they're happy to mess around their system as well. So I'll put links to show notes of both of these people. So you've got Greasing Adventures and you've got Apocalypse Players. I would say Apocalypse Players probably, even though not we're going around as long, it's probably better produced if I'm honest. There's a lot more general consistent quality to it, and they do things like, but at the start of each session and stuff, they'll have like voice acted bits representing almost like a sort of prequel stuff prior to the player characters. They'll voice act bits between other characters and stuff, which is quite neat. They're the two main ones I listen to. The first one I watched, there's a gaming channel called No Rolls Barred, where they play board games, and they played a game of Call of Cthulhu, which is what I watched, which sort of piqued my interest, and that's what sort of got me to then buy the same system. And the guy who did the who gatekeepered the Call of Cthulhu on Noah's Bard is also one of the players on the Apocalypse Players podcast.
Sure. So okay. That's cool.
That's how it all linked together for me. So I picked it up because I known Call of Cthulhu for some time as I knew the sort of like I knew of Lovecraft and I know of it but didn't know in depth. I think playing the game sort of got me more into the mythology of it, into sort of more Lovecraft mythology. So I played the Call of Cthulhu computer game a few months ago. That got me into the mythology of it, and then watching that sort of pulled me into the RPG side of it as well. So that's how I got into it.
Oh, cool.
In a very roundabout way. Neat.
There's more.
I didn't talk about combat. Combat works. Hey, you wanted me to save the podcast. I'm saving the podcast.
He's saving the podcast.
Combat is a really neat system. So what you do is, and this is also how it works for when you have like opposed roles, which when two players roll against each other. If someone decides to fight you, we're not talking guns here, we're just talking general melee. Perhaps going to try and brawl you. Basically, you both roll your D100 against your fighting skill, and whoever has the higher degree of success wins. So if you get regular and they get hard, they win. And what makes a draw, how that works is, when you get attacked, you can choose to either try and defend yourself against the attack, like just defensive, or you can try and fight back. And on a draw, if you try to defend yourself, you automatically win. If you try to fight on draw, the opponent wins. So that's all slight subtle difference. But if you win, you can do damage to them, whereas on defense, if you do damage, you don't get to do damage against them. Guns, because you play in dexterity order in a round, how each round goes. If you've got a gun, because guns are quite fast firing, it adds 50 to your dexterity number straight away. If you've got the gun ready, if you've got it drawn and ready, it just adds your number to 550, which I think is kind of neat. Which makes sense, you know, in a gunfight, and guns are pretty deadly. You can probably survive being shot once or twice in Call of Cthulhu. You might be lucky if you're shot three times, if you've got very lucky, but generally it's going to be once or twice. So, but
no combat, surprises there, mate.
No. But again, they actually say, one thing they put in the Keeper's Handbook is make it clear to your players that this is meant to be normal. Although you're dealing with outer worldly monstrous creatures, you are just normal people.
This isn't Call of Duty.
No, it's not. It's not. You are just normal people. And if you decide to go gun ho, you will die. You know, unless you're really lucky. And sometimes you do get lucky, but in general, you're going to die. So, you know, just try and sort of, you can't go, it's not like D&D where you can go sort of full murder hobo straight from the start. You can't do this. It is pretty deadly.
It's the Hunt Showdown of pen and paper RPGs.
Actually, Hunt Showdown is actually a really good, like, if I say to somebody what Call of Cthulhu was like, Hunt Show is a really good like thing because you are dealing with like outer-worldly entities in the game. There's group shoot. It's deadly combat. It's deadly in general.
Yeah.
You're going to do a lot of damage. Actually, Hunt Show is very Cthulhu-like in terms of atmosphere.
Yeah.
It works well. So I could see easily you writing a Call of Cthulhu scenario based around Hunt Showdown.
Easily. Fantastic.
Well, that passes us the inspiration. If we do one, I'll do Hunt Showdown thing, Call of Cthulhu version. It's amazing actually how it is. Honestly, I'm so pleased with it. I've really enjoyed my time. I can't rate it enough. It's if you've played RPG, if all you've ever played is D&D, seriously, give this a go. You can download the rules for free on their website.
Had me sold the second you said that there was a choose your own adventure style.
I will link
game
you to
it
straight after this. I'll put the link in the show notes and I'll link you straight away to it.
To teach someone the game.
It's marvelous, isn't it? It's like you can see someone's control players with like a D&D star set. You need people to play with you straight away.
Mm-hmm.
This you don't. It's designed to go, hey, have a go, learn the basics of the rules straight away, and then you can go from there, and then you can get your friends involved and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think there's a point that there's a market to be made for Chaosium to make more of these choose your own adventure style.
Well, no, that's what I was about to say. I'd love it if they did that.
Yeah.
Because I love those. Yeah. I absolutely love those. And I mean, sometimes you just want to kind of, you know, dick around and kind of something a little bit more immersive than just reading a book, but you don't want to play a game, as it were. You know, you don't want to sit there and, like, you know, grab your control pad or your mouse and keyboard. You don't want to sit there and actually have the game just kind of visualize. You just want to sit there and just zone out a bit.
Yeah.
I love choose your own adventure books, but the trouble is you don't get a huge amount. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I've done a few campaigns. I'm fresh with the rules. Ah, my mates are free this Saturday. Now I get to play a multiplayer session.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. The adventure I'd say it gives you is very basic. It's not a very complicated adventure, but it's not meant to be. It's meant to just give you the basic idea of how the rules work.
Yeah.
So you're about to play through it in about half hour, 40 minutes, but that's enough. You know, enough to get the idea. So, but I'll put a link in the show notes for it, and I will send you a link across to that straight after this. I'll send you a link across so you can have a go. All you need is literally 2d10s and a character sheet. That's all you need, and a pencil.
Or if you're going to do it's a bit dangerous. I don't know if I'm trustable one of those.
Or load the character. There's an editable version of the character sheet.
Oh, cool.
You can PDF. So you just have that to hand, just type in the numbers manually.
Neat.
So I'll link that to you. So that is Call of Cthulhu. So I hope I've saved the podcast.
You're doing a fantastic job, mate.
Okay. But yeah, great fun. I still have to speak to Zaber, see what he wants to do, and we'll go from there. So is there anything you'd like to do or talk about, Skaz, before we wrap up?
I'm done, Gov.
Marvellous.
I haven't done anything.
No worries. Well, thank you very much for joining us again this evening. You can check us out on our next podcast, which will be on, he says, looking at the date on the calendar.
Yeah,
the
you threw me off on that one, you bastard.
Yeah, the 9th of September at roughly 9:30, plus one GMT, here on youtube.com/randnerds or twitch.tv/randnerds. You can check out our games nights, where we have gone back to a classic for us, Hunt Showdown, one of the first games we played on games night. We've returned to the Bayou, and we are shit.
Yep.
And you get to watch that shittiness on Wednesday.
Mate.
So you can check out my Twitch stream at twitch.tv/sufferkram.
And I'm twitch.tv/Skazius, SK4ZZI0US.
So check that out, and I look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks' time. So, for me, Sufferkram.
And Skazius.
So have a good time. See you later, guys.